After the Fire, a Still Small Voice, written by Evie Wilde and read by David Tredinnick. Frank liked the idea of living off the land, and he pictured himself pickling beetroot and biting into sweet capsicum and sun-warmed tomatoes. He'd have an area for experimentation, for exotics, prickly pears, artichokes, watermelons. He paced out a vegetable garden, planting four sticks as markers in the corners, and later in the day browsed the seeds in the camping shop. He took tomatoes, lettuce, leeks, curly beans, spiny cucumber and marrow. He bought a tin watering can and a set of different-sized forks and trowels. The woman did nothing but nod and smile this time, for which he was grateful. On the drive home, he stopped short of the cane, turned off the engine and walked into the shade of the blue gums to get a breath of their coolness and have a look around at what was his. Hot sheets of eucalyptus rose from the ground, and he thought of the creek where he and Beau had found the fat, pale yabbies. Beau boasting about how he could put his hand under water and come up with five clinging, one on each finger. If he had wanted to. The evening he'd left Eliza by the jacaranda tree with the half-empty bottle of rum and crying because he'd shouted, because he'd gone all aggressive, Beau turned up with a bleeding ear and a ropey sleeping bag.
"I gotta go away, Franco," he said.
They'd walked out of the suburbs without speaking, Beau's ear still bleeding down his big neck, Frank with a sleeping bag, two stale loaves and a bag full of the dark syrup stout his old man had taken to drinking, and the gasoline tins that banged against the back of his knee as he walked. They drank steadily and thumbed a lift in the back of a truck with an old cattle dog, which was on the nose, but friendly. The dog put its head in his lap and he played with its cold ears. His old man had been face down at the kitchen table as he left, breathing wetly. They'd walked the last few miles to Mullabury, stopping now and again to huff on a gasoline-wet tea towel, then ambling on, blinking in silence, their eyes on the sky, which was black and gold in places. Road trains blasted by them in the dark, and Frank could feel the wind from them parting his hair. At Mullabury Beach, they put their sleeping sacks on the sand and built a fire to keep off the biting things. Neither of them wanted the feel of a roof over his head. Beau looked at him in a way that Frank could see he'd already got old on the inside.
"Can't hear nothing from me ear," he said. "Reckon she's bust it for good."
Frank opened a fresh bottle and handed it to him. Things beyond the gold ring of the fire moved in and out like black sea anemones.
"Reckon you should get someone to look at that?"
He hoped not. He didn't know where they would find a doctor, and he didn't want to be thinking about it. Not now.
"Nah, the other one's still going."
Beau made a honk that might have been a laugh. The waves rumbled on.
"I hit her back."
Beau took a dramatic swig of the bottle.
"Cripes, mate,"
was all Frank could think to say.
"Well, cripes. It had to happen one day."
Beau looked at his knuckles. He smoothed them over his lips and closed his eyes.